1, 2, 3.
You're listening to Sports Talk Chicago with your host, John Zagluhl.
John, I am fantastic. Thank you for having me. You got an awesome voice, man, and that was a terrific intro. You're like a pro's pro.
You know, that was the first time somebody ever said that, John. No, you're the first person to ever say anything like that. That's very interesting.
You got it, John. Anything for a fellow Chicago guy.
Well, what a great question.
That's a great question. Nobody's actually asked me that.
I like it. What a great question. I never heard that before.
Chase Utley is what? You're saying he's not a Hall of Fame candidate?
You know, it's funny. You may be the only person that I've heard make that connection.
Thank you, John, for having me. I'm doing great. By the way, you have an outstanding voice. Not sure about your face because I haven't met you, but your voice is great.
You're doing a much better job than I ever did. You've had some heavy hitters guests on too, man, so keep up the good work. But it's good to be with you, and I'm ready to talk sports.
Hello, everybody, and welcome in to Sports Talk Chicago. My name's John Zagluhl. Great to have you here. On the Tuesday edition of the program, are the Bulls playoff bound? We'll explain in just a moment, plus a brand new exclusive interview with Jose Canseco. In his return to the program, we discuss so many things about his boxing career, including the Barstool Sports feud, his fight with Billy Hot Takes, and so much more. It's a great interview, and it comes your way near the midway point of this show. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluhl. And if you want to listen to this show at any time in podcast form, search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and SportsTalkChicago.com. Today's show is brought to you by State Farm agent Brian McDabbitt. Here's the deal. When you combine State Farm home and auto insurance, you save an average of $889. State Farm agent Ryan McDevitt is ready to help you combine home and auto and save in Chicago and the surrounding suburbs. Call Ryan today at 630-796-2662. That's 630-796-2662. Or visit his website, ryanismyagent.com. That's ryanismyagent.com. And make sure to mention Sports Talk Chicago. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. I want to start today with this. It takes a big man to admit when he's wrong. Today, I'm that big man. See, when the NBA season started, I was not expecting anything from this Chicago Bulls team. Nothing. I thought if they're lucky, they'll tank again, get another good draft pick, and be set for years to come. I didn't expect a possible playoff run in the first year under AK and Mark Eversley. I just didn't. I didn't see it. The Bulls, to me, before the year, were not a playoff team. They weren't a contender. They were nothing. They were, for all intents and purposes, still a project. But as we sit here today, as we hurtle towards the All-Star break, it's pretty apparent to me that this team is not a project. They're not. They're not a rebuild. They're nothing. They are, at this moment, a playoff team. And I'll say it right now, I did not expect to say that. No way. I'll admit it too. Before the year began, I said, trade everybody. I said there were no assets on this roster besides some of the young guys. Kobe White had some time. Pat Williams was new. But definitely trade LaVine and Markkanen and Carter and Thad Young. That's what I thought. Not anymore. Even up to about 2 weeks ago, I said it's time to trade Zach LaVine. But now he's played too well to be traded. If you've listened to this show, if you watched it, you know I'm very, very hard to persuade in a different direction. I don't waffle. I don't go back and forth. Zach LaVine and the way he's played has forced me to change my opinion on him. How in your right mind could you trade a guy who's averaging 29 points per game? And I get it. He's the only good player on the team. He's the only number one scorer. He has no one else to compete with. If he was on another team, he'd be averaging 20, 18. I get it. I know. But the numbers are what they are. You can't trade that. You can't get rid of that. You kidding me? Even Lauri Markkanen. Now, I still think he needs to go. Not a number one. No way. Not even a number two, I would say. Or like a three or a four. Like Kevin Love, once he got to Cleveland. That's my ceiling for Lauri Markkanen. Not bad, but not great. Averaging 19-6 right now. Those numbers make it really hard to trade him. If you're the Bulls, and you look at that line, you have to think to yourself, how could this guy not be a part of our future? Kobe White up to 16 again. Granted, he's not a point guard, but he could score. And Thad Young. How about this year from Thad Young? Off the bench, 28 games, 12 points, 6 boards. That's unbelievable. I'd say he should be in contention right now for the Sixth Man of the Year award. Tell me I'm wrong. Now, I know he has veteran leadership and everyone looks up to him, but that's a guy I would trade. You could get back a good haul for a guy who's been in the league for 13 years. That's a no-brainer. I hope AK and Mark Eberle consider that. But other than that, I am just pleasantly surprised and even a bit shocked at where this team is right now. Number 8 seed, tied for it with the Pacers and Hornets. But still, better than what we would have expected, right? Better than last year. You know, I remember 2 weeks ago it was. Writers, columnists, all saying, oh my goodness, the Bulls are starting just like last year. There's no improvement. There's nothing. This team is the same. That narrative's gone. See? This is a different team. People could say what they want. You could try and find comparisons to Jim Boylan or to Fred Hoiberg. And I'm sure there are some out there. You could degrade this team, find every negative aspect, say they aren't winning fast enough, or you could look at the positives. For the first time in a long time, people care about the Bulls. There's actual excitement. Players on the team are performing. When's the last time a Bulls player averaged 29 points per game? Oh, that's right. Michael Jordan. Don't listen to the haters and the critics for this team. They're young. They're inexperienced. Before the season, we all expected another rebuilding year, and we were okay with that. I was. I had no issue with that. I was hoping they'd lose. Get a new pick, do great. Now look. Top 8 team. Possible playoff appearance. Zach LaVine's an all-star. Lauri Markkanen is averaging 20 points a game. Who expected that? Who expected this? Nobody. Is there stuff that needs to be worked on? Yes, of course there is. This team is still young. This is still a rookie head coach. Still a rookie GM. New head of basketball ops. All of it is new and fresh and different. If the Bulls make the playoffs, yeah, they're going to get bounced in round one, sure. No experience. Not good enough compared to the 1, 2, or 3 seeds. We know that. But this is positive. Can you imagine what would happen to this team in 2 or 3 years? To me, they're already ahead of schedule. Think about 2 to 3 years from now where they're going to be. I would hope LaVine is around. Pat Williams will emerge. Maybe Coby White's still here. You could go out and spend some money, bring in a bona fide superstar or two. Then all of a sudden, you've got yourself a really good team. A true contender. I can see it. I can see the future. Some people are still a bit wishy-washy. Some people are still a bit concerned about defense, and don't worry about that. It's not all going to come in one day. The Bulls are not going to become the 76ers or the Nets or the Bucks in one day. The Nets have three superstars. And they're still a half game out of the number one seed. That's because of healthy scratches, which is another whole issue. But still, the point being, the Bulls will be there eventually. Not today. And we shouldn't expect that. We shouldn't be asking for it. Let's be real about this team. I know the trade deadline's coming up. Zach LaVine is not going anywhere. I still think they should test the market for Lauri Markkanen. I'm not saying deal him, but test the market. If there's a big return that you could bring in for him, do it. I like Markkanen. He's an all right player. But I told you, his ceiling is Kevin Love on the Cavaliers. You want to sit around with that? If there's a sweetheart deal, first round pick, NBA ready superstar, you listen and you make the move if you have to. And yes, sorry, you moved Thad Young. He's been a great piece. Give him all the credit in the world. But let's be honest here. Let's be real. Is he going to be around this team when the full rebuild is completed? Cubs fans know this. Anyone remember Brian LeHair? Huh? 2014? First half All-Star? Supposed to be the first baseman of the future? He slumped in the second half. Then Anthony Rizzo made an emergence. And LeHair was gone. LeHair had one good half. Pleasant surprise. Great thing. In the end, not a part of the future plans. Thad Young, great half, 13-year veteran. Been around a long time. Not a part of the future plans. He's old. Comes off the bench. Good role player. Send him to a real contender. And get whatever you can for him. Flip the asset. You signed him for relatively cheap. Flip the asset. Make money off the investment. Now, I did see an article a couple of days ago that Bradley Beal could be a possible trade piece for the Bulls. They could bring him in. I don't know how true this is, just a rumor. But I will say this. You bring in Bradley Beal, team him up with Zach LaVine, keep Lauri Markkanen for the moment, and then in the offseason, sign a superstar, you're set. That's it. You become an instant contender. I am fully on board with that idea. The scary part could be what you have to give up. A couple of first-round picks. Maybe a superstar-type player like Markkanen. Maybe even LaVine, I don't know. But that's an offer you have to listen to. You have to listen to it. Bradley Beal is the most underrated superstar in basketball. More underrated than Zach LaVine. Even Damian Lillard. The guy's sitting around averaging 30 points a game, no one cares. And now no one cares even more because Russell Westbrook is on his team. And Beal is still considered some sidekick. Some nobody, some number two. The guy could score, he could play, he could shoot. You'd be crazy to not at least listen and engage and see what you could get. See what you have to give up to. I'm so excited for the future of this team. It's been a long time coming for a lot of people. There's been heartache. There's been bad management, bad coaching, bad play. Zach LaVine wasn't a superstar until this year. Even before, he really wasn't. And we all know that. Not a lie, that's a fact. But everything seems to be coming together, finally, for this team. It seems like the dysfunction is fading away each and every day. There is a path for the Bulls to become a serious contender. I see it. Just a matter of time. If they continue to play their cards right, they could draft a bit better again, bring in another superstar, flip assets that they don't need, I think they are a finals contender. May not be next year, may not be this year. 2 to 3 years, though. They'll be there. They will. Give it time. Enjoy the ride. I remember as a kid, the 2006, 2007 Bulls. You do too, right? We all knew they weren't finals contenders. They weren't going to win a championship. But they were entertaining and fun. They were called the Baby Bulls. Right? Kirk Heinrich, Ben Gordon, Luol Deng, Andres Nocioni, even. All of them. Very solid role players, some of which turned into decent superstars. They made trades. Remember John Salmons and Brad Miller? Remember Kurt Thomas? That team was active. They were fun to watch, and even though they weren't big-time championship contenders, they made their mark. They played good basketball. They played with heart, and every game was entertaining. This team is already at that point. Give them 2 to 3 years, they'll be ready for an NBA Finals championship. More to come here on Sports Talk Chicago. My exclusive interview with Jose Canseco comes up next, so stay tuned. Hey, do you want to make some money this weekend? What if I told you I could offer you $253 to bet on any game you want? Here's what you have to do. Go to sportstalkchicago.com/cash. sportstalkchicago.com/cash. You must be 21 plus. You must be an Illinois resident. You can bet $253 on any game you want for this upcoming weekend. NHL, NBA, bet on the Bulls. College basketball, too. March Madness coming up right around the corner. This is a great time to put down some money and win a whole lot more back. At sportstalkchicago.com/cash. sportstalkchicago.com/cash. You have a gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Sports Talk Chicago. Here with John Zagluel, and we are back and ready for today's special guest. He's a 2-time World Series champion, 6-time MLB All-Star, and the 1988 AL MVP. Please welcome Jose Canseco to the program. Jose, it's great to have you on again. How are you?
Good, but don't forget to say a wannabe boxer, MMA fighter, the whole combination.
So, Jose, tell me about the fight. How'd Billy Football pull off the win? What happened?
Oh, my God. Well, I think it's coming out now all over the place. I don't know if you guys saw my injuries on Twitter. You guys see a picture of that?
I did.
Okay, so the true story behind the thing is that basically I should not have been in the ring, to be honest with you. So I think people have to understand how these fights are promoted. And it was a huge creation, of course. I remember Barstool calling me. We negotiated a deal. And I had just come off knee surgery 3 months before that. I had what you call complex tears in my meniscus. So Crovetti did the surgery about 3 months ago. So, you know, those surgeries take a while to heal. And, of course, I'm about 265, 270 pounds. So I realized that, number one, I had a very bad knee. I had a very bad problem with that. Number two, my right shoulder was already in very bad shape. So I go into this fight knowing, and you know, ironically enough, the thing was hyped up so great and so well that everybody thought I was going to destroy Billy. By the way, Billy Football, great kid, great family. I have a lot of respect for him. And I met him the day, once we got in, I met him. And I met his family, met him, great, humble kid. So we even talked about, you know, whatever happens after the fight, let's have a beer together, which we actually did, and we'll talk about that after the fact. So I go into this fight realizing I've got 3 weeks to train. So I'm 56 years old with a bad knee, bad right shoulder, trying to figure out, okay, what's going to happen? So we kind of came up with this game plan saying, Jose, you can't use your right, protect your right knee too, and only use a jab. So I'm thinking, okay, how am I going to survive if this kid figures out that my right knee's bad and my right arm basically is useless? How am I going to defend myself? So now, of course, we talk to Barstool, we do an interview. I talk about, yeah, you know, I could beat this kid with one arm. And of course, all promotion, all buildup. And of course, we set all kind of pay-per-view records doing that. But the reality of it is I probably should have never been in the ring. But so now we promote the fight. Oh, yeah, I could beat this kid with one arm, this and that. We're promoting all this. You know, Barstool hates me. I hate them. I hate, you know, their structure. I was supposed to fight Big Frank, but they put in Billy Football. So the thing was hyped really well and done really well. Now, I get into the fight, the actual fight, realizing I only have a jab. That's it. I can't use my right arm. My right knee's pretty much gone. So how do I defend myself? So here's the whole fight in a nutshell, basically 10 seconds worth. So I knew he was going to come at me aggressively, left-right combo. My only chance was we constructed. We're going to say, okay, Jose, when he comes at you, when he comes in the range, the first thing you're going to do is step and throw a hard knockout jab to his head, to his face. And if you land it, because I threw it so hard, hopefully I can knock this kid out and end the fight there. But so he comes in the range. As I throw the left hand, the jab as hard as I can, he moves to his left, which is my right. I miss. As soon as I missed, I tore my bicep tendon, my pec muscle, and my shoulder muscle all in one shot.
Wow.
And as you can see that, all the swelling, all the purple on my left arm was because that one shot. Boom. So now my left arm is gone. I feel that this hot flash go through my arm as I throw it, went down. My left arm is gone. Now I have no right, no left, and no knee on the right-hand side. Now we get into a little bit of a scuffle. I try to throw a body shot. My right arm basically dies out on me. Then we separate. He comes at me with a left-right combo again, but then he puts kind of like body weight on me, but I move to my right also to avoid it. When I move to my right, what happens? I put 270 pounds on my right knee. My right knee starts buckling from under me. As I'm going down, he throws a left and right. Luckily, he missed me completely as I'm going down. Now, when I hit the ground, I braced against the ground with my right arm. When I put 270 pounds on my right arm that was already damaged, it pops out of place, pops back into place. So then you see me on the ground holding my right arm going, holy my God, I thought I blew the hole. I thought I broke it. I thought it was gone completely. My right shoulder's gone. Now, literally my right knee's gone. My right shoulder's gone. And I'm like, okay, I can't even move. Basically done. Now I feel my left arm blowing up, swelling with blood. Obviously because I tore my chest cavity. I tore my shoulder, my bicep tendon. You can actually see the swelling and the blood. My chest swells up. It looked like I had a huge implant on my left side of my chest. So now it gets purple, swells up with blood. So now I've got no arms to fight with, no knee. And then the fight ended right there. Everybody's saying, oh, Jose took a dive. I did not take a dive, people. Don't be so ridiculous. As a matter of fact, how am I going to fight with no arms and one leg? It's impossible. As a matter of fact, I'm probably going to go in this week for double shoulder surgery. So I think we put the MRI what the MRI showed on my right shoulder, it has a bicep tendon tear, rotator cuff, cuff tear, and my whole shoulder's torn. On my left side, The pec is separated and completely ripped off with a bicep tendon tear. So, yeah, how did I throw a fight? How did I take a dive? When basically, and it's all there, the medical report is there. And I hate people when they say, you know, oh, he took a dive. No, it wasn't even about that. First of all, if I was completely healthy, I would have easily beat him. No ifs and buts about it.
Right.
But the reality is that he fought a 56-year-old man at the end with one good leg, two bad shoulders, and no way to defend himself. And that is exactly what happened.
Let me ask you this. Why'd you go through with it if you weren't 100%? Why not wait till you're fully healthy and then do a fight like this?
Right, because I think, you know, a lot of pressure was put on because they needed me to break all kind of records.
Sure.
And we did. I think their previous pay-per-view was 37,000. We went up to 145,000.
Wow.
So we set all kind of pay-per-view records. Yes, I did make $1.1 million. Yes, they made millions too. It was a great show. I think it was a great success. I was hoping to last longer. But bottom line is that I wasn't healthy enough to even protect myself. Would it have been a little bit better if I would have never torn my left shoulder on the first jab? Yeah, of course. But I don't think it would have mattered because when I miss with my left, let's say if I don't tear my shoulder, when I put the weight on my right knee gave out. And right. They knew this. If you look at the interviews I did with Barstool, I talk about, yeah, I'm going to beat him even though I just had knee surgery 3 months ago. You could check it out with Crovetti, extensive knee surgery. They didn't care. They did not care. It was all about, you know, pay-per-views, selling pay-per-views.
Jose Canseco here on Sports Talk Chicago. Jose, how would you characterize the way Barstool's treated you after this fight?
Well, obviously, a lot of things they're saying completely untrue. And I think probably they're going to have to owe me an apology once. I think they've already seen the medical records, the MRI results. Next step would be, of course, I'm going for I want to have both shoulders done at the same time. My sister's here from out of town to take care of me after that. We want to see what the doctors have to say. For example, they may say, no, Jose, only do one shoulder at one time. That way there's less stress on you and you can use at least one arm to wipe your ass. Can I say ass on here?
Yes, you can.
Okay. So can you imagine? That's all I need. Be immobile. And okay, my sister's here. Sis, can you wipe my ass here? No. So we got to figure out, we're definitely going to do my right shoulder first. It's in the worst shape possible and it's killing me every single night. I got just done. But if they say, okay, we can do both shoulders, but you can wipe your ass. Okay. Then I could do that. But that's where we're at.
What makes Dave Portnoy, quote, a liar and a greasy salesman?
Well, obviously, just not even talking to me after the event, not even having me explain what happened. He just commented, oh, he went down. He took a dive because they had me a 3-1 favorite to beat this kid. Yes, I've got some background experience in martial arts. And celebrity boxing, you know, I've taken my lumps and I've won some, but definitely have more experience than the kid has. And like I said, listen, be honest with you, if I'm 100% healthy, the kid has no chance whatsoever because I knew exactly what he was going to do. I just physically couldn't fight him off. So, yeah, the statements he made that I threw the fight, that I took a dive without even contacting me, without even letting me explain or asking for some details, some facts and some information, it's pretty disgusting.
Why do you think he said that? Did it have to do with the money, do you think?
I don't know. You know, it's probably a question for him. Maybe to cover his ass. Maybe because they were expecting the fight to last a little longer. Maybe because they were expecting me to win. You know, I heard rumors that what they really wanted was for me to win the fight. And then they were going to contract me to fight for Barstool Sports.
Really?
So, yeah, that was a rumor going around that was the way it was supposed to work out.
Would you have done that?
You know, if I would have won, I don't know. You really don't know what's going to happen. I will fight again, but this time I'm going to make sure I'm 100% healthy because listen, I fought in Japan. I fought Hungman Choi, who was 7'2", 400 pounds. And after that, everybody looks tiny. But if you look at the fight, I went in with a very bad knee. As a matter of fact, eventually my knee gave out.
Right.
That's when Hungry Man Choi got on top of me and started pounding me on the ground, because I haven't fought, 100% physically able to. So will I do celebrity boxing again? Will I fight again? Yes, but this time there's going to be no excuses, no reason. I'm going to go in 100% healthy, and with proper training too, because at my age, you got to have at least, 4 to 6 months to train. I was completely hurt. I really only had 2.5 to 3 weeks to train. So, everything was working against me. But if you really realize it, the fight was sold very well. It was done well. It was sold well. It created an animosity between Billy and myself, which Billy's a great guy. Afterwards, he came over. I had a beer with him. We actually talked. Great kid, though.
What did you guys talk about?
Just the fight itself. I was trying to figure out, how'd you figure out that my right side was completely dead? It was kind of funny. He goes, well, we knew your knee was bad, so we attacked your right side. Figured we could put pressure on you. We could knock you back. And, their game plan worked perfectly.
Do you want a rematch?
Absolutely. No, I already talked about it. But I think the rematch is probably going to come in about – I figure I have shoulder surgery done on both shoulders, depending on what the rehab is and what the time frame is for these shoulders to heal up 100%. It could take another year.
Who else do you want to fight right now? Is there anyone else in mind that you want to face off with in a ring?
Oh, my God. I'd love to fight Alex Rodriguez.
Really?
I don't know why. I just can't stand that guy.
Why don't you like him?
Issues with my ex-wife. It's a really long story. Him and I go back a long way. I knew she was 18 years old. I helped him at baseball. He used to be at my house all the time. I knew his mom, his whole entire family. We used to be like family, believe it or not.
Wow.
But that was a very long time ago. Yeah. Alex and I go back a very long way. So, and of course, eventually Logan Paul with the issue of my daughter and their breakup. But of course, losing this fight kind of derailed everything. But I think after I heal up 100%, make sure the knee is 100%, make sure the shoulders are 100%, make sure I train properly, I will be back in that ring for sure. And, people will see a completely different individual in there.
What's your message to A-Rod if he's listening right now?
Oh, just learn how to tell the truth and stop cheating on Jennifer Lopez. What a scoundrel. Oh, my gosh.
Wait, you think he's cheating on her?
No ifs, buts about it. First of all, I know A-Rod. Jennifer Lopez is not his type. He loves young fitness models. And you guys, you got to use reality and common sense. Why aren't they married yet? Number one, can you imagine what that prenup is going to look like? The prenup is going to be probably a foot thick. And on Jennifer Lopez's side, she's probably going to say, if you cheat on me, you got to pay me $2 million. I was going, hell no, you're going to catch me no matter what. So why haven't they gotten married yet? If they're the perfect couple, they're the perfect power couple, they love each other, they have family, why haven't they gotten married yet? There's a reason for that, you guys.
I mean, what makes you make that statement? Because, no one else has said this before, obviously. No one's come out and said, I know A-Rod's cheating or they haven't gotten married. What makes you so confident? How do you know that that's the case?
Well, simply, I know A-Rod. I know his taste. I know what A-Rod does. And he was calling my ex-wife right in front of me. I've got all the information, and it's undisputable. People aren't in my shoes. They just don't understand what's going on. That's all.
Do you want to elaborate on that or what happened?
No. Okay. It'll take a very long time because it's a buildup. And
sure.
I remember the first time A-Rod saw my wife, Jessica.
Okay.
We were in my 5,500-square-foot home gym, and he didn't notice I was standing right next to him. Jessica walks in the room, and he says, to quote, "That's the most beautiful woman I've ever seen."
Wow.
He was drooling, literally physically drooling.
And how do you feel about it?
I said, A-Rod, I'm right here. I'm standing right here. Yeah.
More to come with Jose Canseco in just a moment. Stay tuned. This is Sports Talk Chicago. Jose Canseco, still here on Sports Talk Chicago. Jose, a few more questions before we finish up. Going back to your baseball career, who was the toughest pitcher that you had to face when you played?
You know what's funny? When you're struggling, everybody. And when you're locked in, nobody. And I'm sure baseball players will tell you this, that when you're locked in, everything slows down. Your body slows down. You let the ball travel. Everything you do is right. When you swing, you don't miss. And you tend to find holes everywhere. When you're struggling, no matter what you do, it turns out bad. You don't see the ball well. Everything's moving. Your head's moving. Every time you hit a ball hard. I remember going 0 for 40. I think it was my rookie of the year. I went 0 for, spring at the middle of the break, the All-Star break. I'm leading the league in home runs, hitting about 290, leading the league in RBIs. And all of a sudden, next game after the All-Star break, I go right away 0 for 40. And I'm thinking, what happened? And I'm starting to realize, you know, Ricky Henderson stealing, or whoever it was stealing a base. And I hit a line drive. I would hit a line drive hard as I could to a moving infielder, and they'd grab it and turn a double play. Everything I did was absolutely wrong. And of course, playing at Oakland Coliseum, the biggest foul territory around, the ball doesn't travel anywhere back then. It didn't help any. We had a big home center, remember, like 15 games. So the combinations were just, you know, completely against me. It just didn't work out for me. And I went 0 for 40. I think I broke out of that slump with a home run or something like that. And I remember finally breaking out of it, hitting a home run and throwing my bat against the ground. I'm like, oh, my. I thought I forgot how to hit. I said, wait a minute. Somebody turn off the lights here on me? What the hell's going on? So, yeah.
How mental is baseball, would you say?
It is, because, you know, if you lose your edge, if you lose your confidence – if you let the prior game turn into, for example, let's say the game before, you can't get too high or too low. I've already said this. As a power hitter, I struck out the day before 3 times in a row. You got to put that day behind you and forget about it. If you let it carry on and bring that negativity in and lose confidence, you're going to have a lot of 0 for 3, 0 for 4 days. So I was the type of player that, I could strike out 3 or 4 times in one game. But the next day, I knew that I had the ability to hit 2 or 3 home runs. I remember when I first came up to the big leagues, 1985, they brought me up. I faced Storm Davis, Baltimore Orioles. I came from AAA. I flew in. All of a sudden, Jose, put on a uniform. You're hitting. I faced Storm Davis. I was like 20 years old at Baltimore Orioles Stadium, the old one. I was so nervous. He literally threw 3 sliders. Never saw him. I swung 3 times. I was so nervous. My adrenaline, I couldn't control it. I think for the first 6 to 8 times, I struck out 8 times in a row. Now, think about this. I came from that year, AA, AAA, and even though I missed a month and a half, my batting average was about 350, 360. I had 40-something odd home runs, 100-something 20 RBIs. Basically destroyed AA and AAA. Now I get to the minor leagues. Again, I'm thinking, wait a minute. Is the major league so difficult to hit that I forgot how to hit 2? I can't hit these pitches. I can't hit sliders. I was so nervous. I was a very young kid. Till finally, once you control your adrenaline, coaches spoke with me. I got some more experience. I built my confidence. Then I ended up hitting well again.
Would you succeed in today's game with the influx of strikeouts and home runs and walks?
Well, at 56 years old, no.
But I mean in your prime. Like if you could transplant your 1988 self into 2021 baseball, how do you think you'd do? Better?
Because today's game has changed, I think I'd fit in perfectly. Today's game is, launch angles. If you look at today's game, especially playoffs and World Series, most of the games were won by 1 or 2 runs, and the home run played a big part of it. So, yes, I think I'd fit in today's game more because, of course, of the value of the actual home run, launch angles. And now they value more hitting a ball up in the air. They say you have a much better batting average when you hit the ball in the air than you do on the actual ground. So I think my game would be more tailor-made for today's structure.
Do you believe in launch angles yourself?
I think the game is evolving so much, it's getting extremely technical. So now they're trying to figure out, okay, how we could create a different launch angle, exit velocity, this and that. But I think it's more entertaining for the fans than anything else to know, okay, how fast the baseball came off his bat, how fast his bat speed is, how far the ball went. So I think the game is evolving to the point where they're just giving more and more information to attract different types of crowds.
Do you have a problem with that? Or do you think that's okay?
I don't. I think it's entertaining. I think the review of the actual plays is great because umpires, let me tell you something, umpires will make mistakes. and not even that, you got to look for these umpires that are being paid off. I think that's going to eliminate having once you take the outcome of a game away from umpires, it validates the actual game, because one simple call can turn a game completely around. And I love the fact that they're controlling the strike zone, that they show the fans with an actual box, and umpires are being evaluated. Umpires have to be held accountable. They have to be evaluated. Back then, oh my God, I can show you some calls where an umpire is calling the pitch on the ground for strike three, and you can't even say a thing to him. Or umpires are missing a call at first base. Guy's safe by a mile. They're calling him out. You can't even argue with them. So I think the instant replay is key to making the game more respectable, for sure.
You mentioned umpires could get paid off. Did you know of that before, or do you have an example of that?
Well, for example, let's say Roger Clemens is on the mound.
Okay.
And Roger says, you know, you guys want to play golf today. It's a group of umpires. And Roger comps their golf and gives them golf clubs and stuff like that. That's actually a way of trying to get favor from an umpire, believe it or not. So that was all eliminated. And I've seen, let me tell you, LeVon Hernandez, I remember the World Series against Cincinnati Reds.
Right.
I remember first at bat, and I knew we were going to lose just because of this. Ricky Henderson was hot, smallest strike zone in baseball. First at bat, Ricky gets 3-2 pitch, 6 inches off the plate. They call strike three. I went, oh, my God. We are in trouble today. My first at bat, look at that at bat. 3-2 pitch, cutter, 8 inches away, call strike three. I went, uh-oh, we're going to lose this game quickly. And we did. A strike zone, an expanded strike zone can mean easily a win or loss. No ifs and buts about it.
I don't know about you, but this is news to me. I didn't know pitchers would take out umpires for golf or would comp them to help them get an edge in a game.
You guys weren't in the game. You guys weren't privy to the game. You guys weren't inside the internal mechanics of the actual game, inside the machine. I was inside the machine, and I was the machine at one point. So you got to understand, unless you're in the machine, you're not going to be privy to that information.
In your example, you said Roger Clemens. Was that just an example, or do you know of him doing that?
Well, that's an example, and I've seen that done before with many, many pitchers. You know, how come one pitcher has a bigger strike zone than the other pitcher? How come Maddox back then, if you look at his strike zone, Maddox didn't throw hard.
Right.
But if you force Maddox to the strike zone, he couldn't get you out. If you look at his career, you can ask any player that faced him. Nonetheless, listen, he had great control. Don't get me wrong. But he had great control in the fact of throwing balls where an umpire would usually call it a ball. For him, they call it a strike. Ask any player, any hitter that faced him, and they're going to agree with me 100%.
Now, do you think that's gamesmanship and a skill of Maddox's, or do you think there was some shady stuff going on behind the scenes, or a bit of both maybe too?
There could be so many things. You know, I'm pretty sure in the history of the game, you know, some pitchers paid off umpires. Listen, back then, umpires are human beings like anyone else. They could be on the actual take. They could be paying cash. Playoff World Series combination. You know, an umpire has a bigger strike zone for one pitcher than another pitcher, and makes a huge difference. No one in the major leagues can pitch to the strike zone and get hitters out consistently. You got to be allowed few inches, 3 or 4 inches inside and 3 or 4 inches on the outside part of the plate. You got to be able to expand the plate to be able to get these great hitters out, or else there's no way you could pitch to that small of a zone and consistently get hitters out. It's almost impossible.
And that's okay with you as a hitter to give pitchers that ability?
No, it's not.
I mean,
Jesus Christ. No, you want the smallest zone, you know, of course not. Because let me tell you, in general, these pitchers are tough, but they become way tougher if they're going to get a pitch 4 inches outside, 4 inches outside, 4 inches up, 4 inches down. You can expand that strike zone. It becomes way more difficult. I always thought, I always knew back then when I played, nobody could throw a fastball by me. It was impossible because I had quick hands.
Right.
But if a 3-1 or 3-2 pitch was going to be called 6 inches outside, then I figured, oh, okay, I was in a little bit of trouble because you try to stay located in your zone. If you have to go outside of your zone to hit, then it becomes more difficult. But if you can maintain hitting inside that small plate and they have to throw it over the plate, any pitcher will tell you, I mean, they're not going to last long.
And Jose, before we finish up today, last question. Is it true that if you made the Hall of Fame, you'd have to be a Tampa Bay Rank?
Yes and no. Listen, I'm not really worried about it because I would never make the Hall of Fame. As a matter of fact, I always say this, my stats don't qualify. I was hurt too much. People don't really realize this, but yes, I played 17 years, but 2 years out of those 17 years, I was on the DL. I was just way too hurt. Couldn't be a consistent player. I remember several times by the All-Star break, I think I have 31 home runs, 29 home runs, 80 RBIs, and I go down with back surgery or some issues. So, but someone said this to me the other day, I didn't realize, do you realize you're like 12th or 13th in the world with home runs per at bat? How come you only have 462? I said, well, if you do the math, I just couldn't stay healthy enough. I couldn't stay in the lineup. But if you do the math, if I average a home run every 14 point something at bats, if I would have played 20 years, you do 20 times 640 at bats, you're looking at over 700 home runs. I had the ability. You know, I had severe power, severe hand speed. People don't realize I used to use a 35 length, 36 ounce bat and would whip it like a toothpick. I just could not stay in the lineup long enough. That's basically it.
Well, Jose, thank you again for joining me. Always a pleasure to catch up with you. Let's do it again soon. And best wishes to you and your health and your surgeries coming up. We wish you a speedy recovery. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. Look at me in the next boxing match.
Great talk there with Jose Canseco. And that'll do it for us today here on Sports Talk Chicago. Big thank you to Jose Canseco himself, Matt Dubia, WCKG, Jim DeTobin, Tomorrow Entertainment, for making this show a success. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluo. And if you want to listen to this show at any time in podcast form, search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and SportsTalkChicago.com. Another great show comes your way tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening. Till then, stay safe and so long, everyone.
No! No! Where are the turtles?